This is 91.7 WVXU Cincinnati Edition. I'm Marianne Zalesnik. The Eastern Corridor Project, which has been discussed for more than a decade, still does not have the money to move forward, but that hasn't stopped debate on the project, which some say would improve the roads, add bike and pedestrian paths, and a commuter train. Others worry about the changes and what they'll do to their communities. Joining me to talk about it are Hamilton County Engineer Ted Hubbard, Vice Mayor of Marymount Joe Stelzer, and Cincinnati Enquirer Transportation Economic Development reporter Jason Williams. We'd like to hear from you, too. You can call us at 513-419-7100 or email us at talk@wvxu.org. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter. Good morning. Good afternoon, gentlemen. Good morning. Listen to me. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Glad to have you here. I'd like to start out letting everyone know that on our website, WVXU.org, if you go to the Cincinnati Edition page, we have a map up and a little information on the Eastern Corridor Project to follow along if you'd like to sort of take a look at it as we're talking about it. Again, that's at WVXU.org on the Cincinnati Edition page. I want to start out with Ted just explaining the project. I think a lot of people have heard about it. Some people are very familiar with it. Others just know it's out there and really don't know what it's going to do. Can you tell us what the project is?
Well, the Eastern Corridor Program, really, it's a program of projects. It's a multimodal program of projects. And the Eastern Corridor area is not really just a corridor. It's a large area, about 200 square miles. It extends from downtown Cincinnati and Xavier University on the west to Milford and Batavia on the east in Claremont County. The project really is designed to address historic deficiencies involving travel efficiency, safety, and connectivity. There are various components of the project that many have heard about. Maybe they haven't. But one of the components is the Red Bank Corridor improvements, which extend basically from I-71 down to the Fairfax area. Then there's the State Route 32 relocation, which will extend from the Fairfax area to the east toward Claremont County. And then we have the Oasis Transit Project, which is a transit project that is proposed that would extend initially from the transit center to Fairfax and then on eastward to Milford and possibly Batavia. It also has the potential to connect Xavier University over the Wasson Line. The one thing that's interesting about this project, it does involve a component called transportation systems management. Basically, those are improvements that squeeze as much capacity as possible out of the existing system. And that's very important because in order for us to build, we want to have the smallest footprint possible. And so you want to improve intersections. You want to provide park and ride. You want to improve intersections like Beachmont and 5 Mile. One of the park and rides that are part of the project involve the Anderson Park and Ride on 5 Mile Road. The problems in the Eastern Corridor have been around for a very, very long time. The congestion, safety, and connectivity issues. Back in the 60s, the idea was basically to use highway-only solutions. The Ohio Department of Transportation actually proposed building a relocated US 50 and a relocated State Route 32. From Cincinnati to points east. That approach is far too intrusive. And so what happened, in the 1990s with the passage of the Intermodal Surface Transportation Act of 1991, it gave us a fresh look on how we're going to advance transportation projects. And so what happened is there was a lot of public involvement, and we had what we call a major investment study where we had a 65-member task force representing all the communities and all the interests and stakeholders in the Eastern Corridor area to convene and come together to come up with a set of improvements that would be acceptable. And that task force was very explicit. They said, look, we want to solve these issues within a multimodal approach. And many of the things that came out of that study effort, which was adopted in 2001, are part of the Eastern Corridor Project today. Later on, after the major investment study was done, there was a land use vision process where all the communities came together and they told us what they wanted to look like two or three decades from now. Now, that's important because historically, transportation improvement projects just happened, and then the land use followed, and we know what kind of problems that creates. Well, the land use vision study was adopted, and again, that's another input that's being used in the Eastern Corridor Project as we progress. Then we move forward into what we call the environmental impact study preliminary engineering phase. There's two tiers. Tier one identified feasible alternative alignments. Tier two is going to identify the preferred alternative alignments. So we had tier one completed. We received a record of decision from the federal government. Where we are now is in the tier two. We're trying to converge on the final alternative alignments. And so that's where we are.
Let's take a little bit of this. And I understand we're in tier two. And before we continue to expand a little bit more about what each of these main projects within the program are and maybe go over them a little bit more. You talked about the Red Bank corridor area. All of this is being done because and being considered because of congestion, right? Is this what's driving this?
No, there's more than congestion. It's about safety, congestion. It's also about connectivity. The idea is that there have been historic problems connecting one neighborhood to another. It's also about economic development. The Eastern Corridor program is also about trying to encourage development in our mature neighborhoods, such as Madisonville and Fairfax, as well as having better connectivity to areas where there's growth right now in the Eastgate area.
Now, you say a mature neighborhood. Those are the older neighborhoods, the neighborhoods that have been around for a long time. Is that what you mean by a mature neighborhood?
I live in a mature neighborhood.
It's an interesting description on that. What I'd like to sort of follow up on then is, as you talk about connectivity, is this, you know, the whole idea, and I know the Inquirer's written about that, Jason's written about that too, where people are driving through northern Kentucky get to Cincinnati, downtown Cincinnati, and those sorts of things. Is that what you're talking about, or is it more to it than that?
Well, actually, what happens, you bring up a very good point. Our existing transportation system encourages the security. You know, what happens, we encourage travel, at least in the southeastern quadrant of Hamilton County, the metro area, over 275 and 71 and 471. Now, you know, if there's through traffic coming, say, from the east to Chicago, fine, they're on 275, they should continue. But if you're progressing toward, say, the downtown area or Madisonville or the Mill Creek Valley, that's highly inefficient. We need to have a parkway or an arterial and also have transit amenities that can better accommodate that movement.
And you say with this, you're also trying to include park and rides and other information to make it better. And there's also the rail line. And why don't you tell us a little bit about this proposed rail line, that light rail that may go through the area?
Well, the light rail is an exciting process. What we've got is we have some existing track that we're trying to make most use of. And so we're looking right now at DMU technology, diesel multiple unit technology, that could be utilized to take a very sleek looking vehicle from the transit center to Fairfax and then eventually to Milford or possibly to Eastgate, to the Eastgate area. It actually is, I think it's got a tremendous amount of potential. We have areas where stations could be located, where development could occur. Transit is very dependent on the stations and the development that occurs around those stations that actually helps support the transit. So we do have some locations where we think that the transit centers could be very helpful in supporting and sustaining the rail. I also might add that the fact that we have roadway improvements connected to the transit gives us a unique opportunity. Normally, when you have a transit center and the influence area is about a half a mile, if we have roadway improvements that connect as well to those transit areas, that expands out to about 6 miles. You get more customers, you have more opportunity for revenue, you have a better opportunity for supporting and sustaining the rail.
What does it cost? What's it going to cost?
Well, there are various estimates out, and the Tier 2 estimates are being done right now, and they're going to be the most, they will be the most accurate. If I were to, you know, I could give you the benefit, the information that came out of the benefit cost study. And roughly, when you look at all the transit amenities, we were looking at about $500 million. And that's everything. That's a global look. Actually, we think it'll be much, much less than that. And that came out of the benefit cost study from 2004. The roadway improvements, including the whole program, is $1.3 billion, broad brush. So we're looking at, you know, less than, you're looking at probably $500 million for all of the transit amenities and another $500 million for all the roadway and transportation systems management improvements. Now, that's a 2004 estimate. What we're seeing is that it's shrinking. The costs are actually shrinking because it was very conservative. And again, that benefit cost study can be made available to anyone who wants to see
for
that.
Who pays for it? Where's the money come from?
Well, you mean when the project is totally completed? Well, part of the work that has to be done once we're done with the as we're completing the Tier 2 work, is to develop a financial implementation plan. It's going to take it's going to have to take creative financing. One of the things that the team has always said from the get-go, this is not going to involve a sales tax increase. So what we need to be doing is we're going to need to be looking at assessments. We're going to be, you know, possibly assessing transit-oriented developments, that type of thing, or getting the folks that benefit, the businesses that benefit from that transit to help contribute. It could involve it could involve a whole host of other things. So, fare box contributions. There could be, again, the transit-oriented development would help support and sustain the rail. Again, we would also need to be able to use state and federal dollars to construct and move forward with the transportation improvements.
Yeah, so and this are there state and federal dollars out there available for this sort of thing now? Do you have to apply for them? How does that work?
You would have to apply for them. That's correct. Mm-hmm. And again, this isn't going to be built over in one phase. It will be built over the years. You have to phase. The interstate system was not built in one time. I mean, if when I-71 was originally proposed, you know, obviously it could not be built in one phase. It was done over multiple phases.
Well, thank you so much. We're talking this afternoon about the proposed Eastern Corridor project. You heard from Ted Hubbard, who is the Hamilton County engineer. We're going to talk with some folks in some of the communities nearby the project, as well as the transportation reporter from the Enquirer. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, email us, talk@wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik. We're talking about the proposed Eastern Corridor project. My guests are Hamilton County Engineer Ted Hubbard, Vice Mayor of Marymount Joe Stelzer, and Cincinnati Enquirer Transportation Economic Development Reporter Jason Williams. You can join the discussion by calling us at 513-419-7100. Email us, talk@wvxu.org. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter. I'm going to get to the calls in just a moment, but first I'd like to have Joe tell us a little bit about how the community of Marymount, and I know you've got some comments from some other communities that this project would affect and what they have to say about it. So what do you think of the Eastern Corridor project?
Okay. Well, thanks, Mary. I'd like to thank you for hosting this forum on this very important subject. The Eastern Corridor, as Ted alluded earlier, is a very complex project. It's trying to explain or discuss this in a 45-minute radio show or a couple-page article in the newspaper is virtually impossible, extremely difficult. There's a lot of websites out there that has tons of information regarding this project, and I would encourage people to kind of go out and, you know, take a look at everything to get themselves as educated as possible. I spent a lot of time in the past year reading through some of these things because the Village of Marymount believes that the current plan would have substantial negative impacts on our community, on a park area that we have just south of our community that borders the Little Miami River. I got involved in this project a couple years ago because I organized a set of hiking, walking, and mountain bike trails along the Little Miami River. That led to me joining council, which then led me to go to an August meeting last year where ODOT presented their options regarding various alternatives for the location of the State Route 32 relocation. Unfortunately, at that meeting, they only had one remaining route and was going right through the middle of our South 80 Park. We found that to be highly objectionable. I believe there's a lot of political leaders in the area that don't support that route. I think Ted Hubbard's come out also and indicated that he doesn't support a route through our South 80 Park. Commissioner Portune doesn't. Other elected leaders at the federal level. However, that route remains as a viable option at this time as we speak. It's still not been removed as a viable option through our South 80 Park for the relocation of State Route 32. Some of the reasons that Marymount objects to this relocation of State Route 32 is kind of unique to Marymount in itself, but also Madisonville and the village of Newtown also object for a lot of the same reasons as we go through it. There's a lot of commonality about objections to the size of the roadway, the amount of traffic that would be going through the roadway, including a significant increase in truck traffic is what is being projected. And so from the view of Marymount itself, we think there'd be significant negative environmental impact on our South 80 Park. The Little Miami Scenic River, which is a great resource as it cuts through the eastern side of Hamilton County, and its wildlife. We think the birds will flee if you put that highway in, including bald eagles that have been recently spotted in the area. Other wildlife will also migrate from the area. We also believe there'd be an increase in noise, air, water, and light pollution to the residents of Marymount, Newtown, and Madisonville, primarily because of the significant additional amount of truck traffic. But we think that ODOT is completely discounting these impacts as they go through the study. You know, recently there was a representative of ODOT that came out and made the statement that even if the Transportation Department chooses this controversial South 80 route, no homes or businesses would be directly impacted, and that other improvements could be made to the area at the same time, such as improved hiking trails. We kind of took this statement as just being silly. How do you improve a hiking trail by destroying the park that it cuts through and then placing a highway in it? It really doesn't make much sense. ODOT continued with their statement saying that there's no development down there at all. They obviously want to protect their village, but the two portions where the roadway is proposed do not directly impact the village itself. While there's no buildings down there, a lot of homes are very nearby the route they want to take, and so there would be impact. You don't need to have structure in the way to have an impact on a community by putting a highway through it.
Are you concerned about the congestion and the connectivity through the area that Ted talked about?
We see a little bit of the congestion, but very short periods of time. And I think there's also one of the views that we have right now is that if we're going to go ahead and do this project that has significant negative impacts, let's just make sure we're clear on all the data. I'm not an expert in this. I'm late to the game. I just came into it, and I've been trying to get educated on everything. But there's been traffic studies over the year that kind of looks at the amount of traffic flow through various points of places in this area where the Eastern Corridor will go through. There is a professor in town who came into a meeting we had in January, public meeting, who brought information to indicate the traffic counts have actually been going down for the last 10 years, not going up. I know there's new studies going on as we speak. We've not seen that data. So you really have to kind of question whether the purpose and need is truly there if the traffic counts are being supported by, you know, this projected increase into the future if for the last reporting period or last period of time it's been going down. You know, no one has the crystal clear to know exactly what's going on there. But, you know, the traffic counts have been going down, so we need to make sure we have the data proper.
Jason, why don't you tell me a little bit? You've covered a lot of the meetings and followed this issue for a long time. What kind of issues have you been hearing about along with what Ted and Joe have talked about?
Well, the biggest issue I hear are that there is no funding source that's been identified. And in this day and age, when particularly in this region, we're kind of in the epicenter of major projects right now with the Martin Luther King Interchange and the Brent Spence Bridge. And when you're talking about major freight arteries and already established economic development and job hubs, and there's been really no funding solutions for those. So that's where kind of so where does the Eastern Corridor fit into that? So that's a big question that I have, and I think that a lot of people have. And then the other one is really like, how does it impact the neighborhoods, Marymount and Newtown? And I am kind of curious as to our editorial that we had last month touched on this, that Fairfax, which has been doing a lot of economic development, really is in favor of the new highway. So they want to alleviate congestion. But on the flip side, Newtown doesn't favor the new highway because they want to keep that traffic coming through the little downtown. So I find that kind of interesting, what the different perspectives on the economic development. I live in Columbia Township. Personally, I live in Columbia Township next to Marymount, and I get very agitated by driving through Fairfax during rush hour. But other than that, I don't have a lot of congestion issues. You do certainly at a rush hour times, but yeah. So to Joe's point is the traffic numbers. I'm curious about that as well.
Our phone number is 513-419-7100. If you'd like to join the conversation, Fred's on the phone from Sharonville. Good day, Fred.
Good afternoon, and thank WVXU for putting on this topic. It's an important one. I wanted to comment on one of your first guests' perspective. I think part of the problem is that they talked about studies that were done to identify where communities wanted to be in say, 20 or 30 years. Well, if we're using studies done from 1991, we're already 20 or 30 years out. And some of the information I think they're using for planning purposes is dated, is old, and simply the length of these projects from study to end is just, the life cycle is just way too long. A perfect example of that, and maybe it's ODOT, maybe it's more general than that, but a perfect example of that is the Through the Corridor project, or Through the Hill project, Through the Valley, I guess, is what they called it, I-75. I remember having public hearings on that. It seemed like, I don't know, maybe 8, 9, 10 years ago, and it's still not moving at all. And in my opinion, the most of the traffic problems are north to south, certainly not east to west. And if that's what they're focusing on, I think they're focusing on the wrong area. That's my general comment.
Well, first of all, Fred, thank you for your question. One of the things that we've done when I was talking about the land use vision study that was previously done, that wasn't the end of the public involvement. We've had public involvement incorporated into this process ever since. We are constantly engaged with the communities. And what you find over time, too, is sometimes the communities will shift positions. I understand Joe's concern. I've talked with Joe many times, who's with us on the program today. But actually, Marymount at one time was very, 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 very supportive of the project. And I also understand your concern about north-south travel. It's very important. We're not talking about trying to stop any projects that would impede the north-south travel, especially through the I-75 corridor. But I got to tell you this: what our studies show, we have a problem with east-west travel too. And what we're finding is with the improvements we've got proposed on the eastern corridor, that we can reduce delay by 15,000 fewer hours per day with improvements. We can also reduce the vehicle miles traveled by 50 million vehicle miles per year. That's critical. That means we're more efficient. That means we're not generating the pollution we would be generating if the project weren't built. It gives us a real opportunity. And furthermore, the benefit-cost study showed that over a period of time, we generate 10,000 jobs. So it is worth looking into, I think, from my view. I've got to say one thing, though. I think it's extremely important. This process that we talk about, this NEPA process, even though it's cumbersome and it's painful, what it does do, it will force us to look at impacts and benefits. And it is possible, at the end of the day, that we might look at the benefits and the impacts and say, you know what, we know there are benefits, but we don't want to pursue those benefits. That's a possibility. And that's why this process is good. It's long and it needs to be revised, I will tell you that, because it is cumbersome and in some ways wasteful. But it is a good process because it forces us as communities and as citizens to look at our situation and decide if we want to make the investment or not.
Joe, your thoughts?
I'll go through a couple things here. The question about Fairfax, where they're at on this process. I've had some conversations with Fairfax's mayor, and while they do support the Eastern Corridor because they think that there could be a possibility of a train station coming into the Fairfax area off of the light rail proposal, they view that as being a plus. Plus, the actual routes that are now being projected don't go anywhere near the residential areas, so they're pretty much on it. Their mayor also does not support a route through the South 80. You know, we're kind of a sister community. We share the same school districts. But again, it's another political figure who does not believe that the route through the South 80 should be included in this process at this point in time. Regarding Marymount being supportive of this project initially, I would say, yeah, that probably was the case when Marymount was being told for a long period of time, almost 10 years, that the route through the South 80 was never going to be selected. We had representatives from ODOT. We had representatives, contractors from ODOT telling us that. There were maps that were being shared that showed it running well south of the river, never coming north through our area. And so I will say that Marymount was supportive if it was on the other side of the river. I think that all changed with the August 2012 maps that came out.
Well, my response to that, I can tell you that over what happened, we had multiple alignments in the Tier 2 work. And I mean, there was a wide footprint. We had to do, we meaning the team, had to do what we call a geomorphological study, which is a study of the Little Miami River to determine, to take a look at the meandering characteristics. And what happened was at the end of that study, it showed that the area where the river doesn't meander much, where it's pretty stable, the most stable, was in that northern alignment. So that did give the, unexpectedly, it did give that corridor, put us in a position where we had to study that corridor. There's another corridor to the south that is not quite as stable, but is still stable, that we believe is also very, very viable. A lot of folks, including myself, didn't think that the northern alignment was something that was all that attractive. Unfortunately, the NEPA process does require us to in order to put that alignment to the side, we have to do what they call a 106 analysis. It's where we take and we actually take a look at the we look at the historical and archaeological characteristics of both alignments. We look at the impacts that you know that the both alignments can create, and then we can eliminate one alignment. Now, I want to say one thing. I think Marymount's done an outstanding job at making their point known. Their mayor has sent me information. That was sent to ODOT. I'm glad that they're engaged in this process. That's what this process is about. And I hope they, and I know they'll stay engaged, but it is critically important so we get the best alignment.
We got a tweet from Fred, thank you very much for your call. Mm-hmm. We appreciate it. We have a tweet from Jennifer who says, I live in Withamsville and would love to have light rail or other options. We do feel limited to driving only. So there's a comment that in that regard in favor of that. Also, again, our phone number 513-419-7100. This call from Greg in Anderson. Hi, Greg.
Hi, how are you today?
Just fine.
I just want to voice my opposition to this highway extension. You know, this goes back many, many years. The cross-county highway where it ends in Montgomery, that originally was proposed to keep going east, but it would go through Indian Hill, and needless to say, the Tafts and other people that had some say in such things didn't really want that. So now we're moving south. Most recently, instead of the cross-county, an extension of what really was conceived of as Interstate 74 going through maybe Marymount. They put up a good explanation and convincing arguments against it. So now it's moved farther south, maybe through Newtown. And I just hope that Newtown has the argumentative ability to oppose it as effectively as Indian Hill and Marymount. I would point out that I have asked at these public meetings about this highway through possibly Newtown, because so much of it would be in a floodplain, it would have to be elevated quite a bit. So you'd have effectively a not only a highway going through the heart of that village, pretty much bisecting it and ruining it, but it would also be quite a bit of it an elevated highway. Whereas every time I read about the information about it, they talk about how it's going to be a boulevard, and in the center it has this, and on the sides a bike trail.
Let Ted Hubbard respond.
You can't do that.
Let Ted Hubbard respond to that, the idea of an elevated highway there.
Well, the elevated highway, first of all, all of the infrastructure that approaches the Little Miami River is on some form of elevated facility. You look at Church Street, you look at the railroad, you look at the Beachmont Levee, they all are. This roadway and also the rail, when and if constructed, will be built in such a way so that it'll have minimum impact on the hydraulic characteristics of the river. I do want to make one quick point. We have made it extremely clear. We will not support any type of interstate facility, new interstate facility in the Eastern Corridor area. Former County Engineer Bill Brayshaw and I both issued a letter back in 1998 that made that specifically clear. We would not support the Eastern Corridor. He would not have supported the Eastern Corridor if it involved Interstate 74. And I'll tell you, as county engineer, I will not support the Eastern Corridor if it involved Interstate 74 coming through the area. So I want to put that to rest. The other issue on Ronald Reagan Highway, you mentioned, or Cross County Highway. I grew up in the Cross County Highway Corridor. Real quick, Indian Hill, that area of Indian Hill was never addressed in an environmental impact study. So the environmental impact study went from, the environmental impact work did not go at all east of Montgomery Road in any way, shape, or form. So that was never addressed in the process at all.
Greg, anything else?
Yeah, well, I still would like to know how much of it would be elevated if that southern route were chosen and where it would go through
Joe?
Newtown.
Joe?
Greg, thanks for calling, but I'd like to kind of chime in a little bit. I've talked with the mayor of Newtown, Kirk Cosby, and recently on their village website, they have a flyer that they recently put together alleging that the Eastern Corridor Highway would be the end of Newtown as we know it. On that flyer, they actually talk about the elevated highway, and I know they don't like me to use the term highway in describing this project, but the elevated roadway as it passes through the Little Miami River Valley. And quite frankly, at our public information meeting in January, that was the thing that was most alarming to our citizens when they saw, graphic presentation from ODOT about this wonderful, we call it a Disney-esque view of this roadway going through the Marymount area with bike paths and trains, and you can almost see the smiles on people's faces as they're walking down the trails versus this concept of a roadway that was probably going to be 20 to 25 feet in the air at a minimum, either being built with piers or fill to basically get it out of the floodway.
We are talking this afternoon about the Eastern Corridor Project. I want to thank Greg for your call. I appreciate it. Thank you so much. And we've been talking about the project. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, emailing us, talk@wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. We'll continue our discussion in just a moment. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik. We continue our discussion about the Eastern Corridor Project. My guests are Hamilton County Engineer Ted Hubbard, Vice Mayor of Marymount Joe Stelzer, and Cincinnati Inquirer Transportation Economic Development Reporter Jason Williams. We'd like to hear from you, too. You can call us at 513-419-7100 or email us talk@wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Ted, you wanted to stress again that this is not an extension of 74.
That's correct. I mean, the whole idea here is to try to improve transportation in the Eastern Corridor area. We have said previously, and I'm saying it today, I would not support an interstate highway going through the Eastern Corridor area, a new interstate highway. Put it in writing before, and I'm saying right now, if that were part of the program, I would withdraw my support for the project. So no interstate highway in the Eastern Corridor area, no new interstate highway.
Jason, you had a question.
Yeah, Ted, funding has been such an issue for the project. You did touch on some alternative funding sources. I'd like to see if you maybe would expand on that a little bit. You know, when we hear around here the creative funding or alternative funding, we think about public-private partnerships. You know, in regard to the Brent Spence, you hear about tolls. Are you talking creative funding for the entire project, or just the rail, or just the highway? Could that include tolls for the highway? I know that is actually being used in around Akron to build a highway, like just kind of a normal four-lane highway. They're using tolls to build that. Is that something?
Well, Jason, at this point in time, I wouldn't take anything off the table, because I do think that we have to be very creative, you know, when it comes to funding infrastructure in the future. But when I think of public-private partnerships, I think of different ways in which those that benefit can pay and help support and sustain the infrastructure. Now, that can be done a whole host of ways. One of the things that we've done historically is we've asked for dedication of right-of-way and dedication of property. Right-of-way is an extremely difficult item to purchase anymore, and it's very expensive. There are folks, once we have a defined line as a preferred alternative alignment, then what we're going to see is there are going to be certain properties that could benefit from the improvements and certain properties that won't be impacted at all. And I think you'll also see the anxiety level drop dramatically. once we have that, then there will be folks that are probably willing to help dedicate right away. We've seen this over the decades at the county engineer's office. We've also said, but there are also other ways in which we might have to look in order to get local match, to get federal funds and other grants. And one of the things that has been talked about historically is this process whereby local communities pay based on or contribute based on the amount of traffic they generate. So ODOT would pay so much, Hamilton County would pay so much, somebody else would pay so much based on their use, basically. And that could also be a possibility. But at this point in time, we have to keep all of the options open. Mm-hmm. And that's it. And I think once we get through this environmental process, we get to the end of it, we're going to be able then to start locking in on how we can come up with a financial plan on how we're going to pay for the construction. Let me say this, when most projects, when they're in their environmental phase, you don't know how you're going to pay for it. It's too early to tell. We are looking at the horizon. And as we converge on a preferred alternative line with the good help of folks from Marymount and everybody else, even those that are opposed, when we converge on something that we can live with, then what will happen is we'll have a better idea on how to fund it.
Go now to Kathy from Newtown. And Kathy, did you have a question? Kathy, did you have a question, or is this Bill? Bill, Bill, go right ahead with your question.
Oh, yeah. Yes. One of the things that has begun to be talked about recently with this project is one that I want to raise, and that's the concept of developing basically another alternative, which would be the so-called low-build alternative, mm-hmm. LOW build. And what that is that comes from the rationale that this project, again, we're only talking about the project in Hamilton County. The parts in Claremont County have already basically, they've had the funds lined up, and I think construction started last week on the I-70-275-32 interchange. But for the portions of it in Hamilton County, it's going to be extraordinarily expensive. Personally, I don't see the rationale for building, for relocating Route 32 through the Willamette Valley, and I don't see the rationale for building the commuter rail, which I guess is going to cost somewhere like $500 or $600 million. So my question is, there definitely is a need to improve transportation in the corridor, especially more public transportation, not necessarily commuter rail, but more bus. So why isn't there an alternative developed that deals with some of the specific issues like on Clough Pike and Beachmont Avenue, Red Bank Road, Route 50, makes those improvements, increases public transportation, improves the hike-bike infrastructure for the off-road trail, but without building the road to the Willamette Valley and without building the commuter rail? Why don't we get an alternative that would be more community-focused and be cheaper?
The low-build option you talked about, Bill, is actually is really part of transportation systems management. I think low build, you hear different terms, but low build is something that is part of the program. We have to develop transportation infrastructure that has the smallest footprint possible. And as far as you mentioned, expanded bus, again, that's part of the program as well. So, I mean, that's all part of the program.
That, Ted, I've heard talk about it, but I've never seen anything concrete about, for instance, how can people in Madisonville, where I live, or some of the city neighborhoods, get out to jobs in Claremont County. I've never seen anything fleshed out about how the bus transit would work for that. I've seen the plans for the commuter rail, but that's not going to get people out to the suburban areas where the jobs are now. I've never seen that fleshed out.
Well, with the rail, the bus transit, the expanded bus transit has got to be developed to accommodate the rail. Whenever you have a rail system, you have to reconfigure your transit system so it feeds into the rail to make it successful. But as part of the project, expanded bus service is part of the project, and it's part of the program. It's been part of the program. Expanded and bike, as far as bicycle connectivity and pedestrian connectivity, any crossing of the Little Miami River is going to be a multimodal crossing, which will include transit, will include a roadway, and will include bike and pedestrian amenities. So what we'll be doing is we'll be connecting all these bicycle facilities. We've got a lot of bicycle facilities in the area, which is great. I think it's a great asset to the community. But we'll be able to tie these together, and so that we'll have more access.
Joe, you wanted to add something?
Yeah, I just want to say hello to Bill. Bill's a member of the Madisonville Community Council, and I'd feel I was leaving Madisonville out if I didn't address their position, because a couple weeks ago, they community council met and reviewed all the options that ODOT had proposed for the Red Bank corridor. A lot of different drawings with roundabouts and elevated roadways and a lot of different things. The Madisonville Community Council looked at all those alternatives and rejected them all, primarily because of the assumption that was underlying all the options regarding the volume of traffic to come through Red Bank. The other thing that actually came out of that meeting, which was fascinating, is that current economic development of that Red Bank and Madison Road area is being stymied because of the uncertainty of this Eastern Corridor project. There was a general counsel of MedPace there who indicated that they were going to spend substantial funds on improvement of that intersection, and right now they are delaying that decision until they have certainty about what's going to happen with this project.
We did have a tweet. Somebody wanted to know how this will impact two great parks that may be in the way, Otto Armletter and Little Miami.
Well, first, I think it'll provide better connectivity to those parks. This is Ted Hubbard again. But I wanted to make one comment. I was at the Madisonville meeting that Joe was talking about. They did reject the overall improvements, but they made it very clear that there were components of the improvements proposed that they liked, and Madisonville and ODOT are going to reconvene to see if we can't weld those together to come up with something that would be acceptable to the community. The other point I want to make is about the uncertainty. I agree with you, Joe. The NEPA process does put communities in an uncertain position. I lived in the Cross County corridor when that was up for grabs for decades. We need to get this EIS process done. I agree with you wholeheartedly. We've got the uncertainty is bad for the communities. The process takes too long. It's really nobody's fault, but we have to be about getting it done. And I do believe that we will have better connectivity to the parks with the improvements.
Kathy's calling from Newtown. Kathy's gone. Thank you very much. This is Michael from Westwood. Michael, do you have a question?
I do. Yes, I'm Michael Miller. I work with the Saturday Stream Snapshot from Green Acres Foundation to analyze their data on the water quality of the Little Miami River for the past decade. It's an exceptional warm water habitat down to within the last 3 miles of the Ohio River. It is the first state and national scenic and wild river in the United States, or scenic and historic river in the United States and in Ohio. It predates the national program. And in any case, this highway, and particularly the elevated component, is going to be heavily salted because it's elevated. And the ODOT has no regulations whatsoever, unlike all other construction in the county, to reduce non-point source pollution. I've analyzed the data that come off of the floating bridge, for example, across Lake Washington as an example. And John Sansalone did the same study on I-75 here in Cincinnati with massive amounts of trace metals and other things that are washed off of these highways, concentrating that flow in the Little Miami River 100-year floodplain, which it will be in, is just not advisable to maintain it. It's also a scenic river, and it's under the control of the National Park System. And
let's let Mr. Hubbard respond here to the concerns. Is there any thought given to that yet, if you have an elevated highway and having to treat it?
Well, Mike, first of all, I appreciate your good comments. I've canoed the river myself. I've canoed it from about the Claremont County line all the way down to Beachmont. I know what an asset it is. I can tell you that the Eastern Corridor team recognizes as well there was a Green Infrastructure Committee that has set together guidelines in an attempt to try to minimize the impact on the river. There will be no piers in the river. We've made that commitment. And as far as salt, I agree with you. At the Hamilton County Engineer's Office, we have reduced our salt distribution by almost 50%. Salt's expensive.
What do you use instead?
We use salt. We just don't use as much. And so we're trying to use that. We have to get people to work. You have to use salt. And we do use calcium chloride as well, depending on what the circumstances are. But we're using less than our distribution rate has dropped dramatically.
Are the roads still in good shape, though? I mean, how do you do that?
We use less salt. It takes a little bit longer for the snow and ice to burn off. But what happens is it does burn off, and we're able to get people to work, and you don't have quite the environmental impact.
Michael, what did you have to say there?
Oh, they mix it with bee juice, an organic material, to adhere it to the pavement before the snow comes down in some instances. And they do that on the interstate.
Well, thank you so much for your call, Michael. We appreciate it. want to go now to Mike from Sims Township. Mike? All right, this is, let's see, this is Singer Williams. William?
I'm Bill Singer.
Bill Singer, I'm sorry about that. Go right ahead.
Okay, listen, I'm an attorney nearly retired, so I think I bring a somewhat intelligent look at this thing. In any event, I've lived in this great community since the city of Cincinnati since 1952, when I was a kid, 10 years old. But now I'm, you know, nearing retirement. I have lived all this development, all these years of development.
What do you think should be done?
Everything that happens is always they got to build a highway for it because cars are the only way that people know how to get around in this town. Buses are not the answer for anything. What we really need is rail transit. Cincinnati dropped the ball on rail transit in 1927, and it's never been picked up again because every time people talk about it, I don't know the difference between light rail and heavy rail or whatever, but rail has got to be the part, something that I think should be emphasized.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for your comment. We're just about out of time here, but I want to thank you so much. We'll talk more about that. Thank you. Thanks, Bill. Jason, what have you been hearing from folks that you've been following as far as light rail is concerned? Is that a positive aspect to this for folks or not?
It's interesting because a lot of the pro-rail folks are against the Eastern Corridor Rail project. So I hear, and this is anecdotally that I pick up on Twitter and emails, and I'm really curious as to why that is, and I think it's because it's the transportation or the population density. They question that. They question the economic development aspect of it. That I think there's the mentality that you build the stations and then the economic development pops up around that.
Joe, what are you hearing?
Maybe in a reverse.
Well, you know, officially Marymount right now is supportive of the light rail, bike trails, those components of the Eastern Corridor project. We're just against the State Route 32. But I've heard very similar things about questions of ridership, potential ridership in the future. Yeah. I've also heard from professional developers in the area that there's just not enough real estate along, whether it's the Oasis line going along Eastern Avenue, because you're kind of limited with the upslope going up through Columbia Parkway and the downslope. Mm-hmm. Other areas probably wouldn't present much of an opportunity for development. So there's some pretty well-heeled developers out there that are questioning the concept of, you know, is this the right place to put a light rail? I've not gotten into that deep enough to know one way. I'm just hearing a lot of the noise because we're more focused on the State Route 32 relocation than the light rail and the bike pass at this point.
We did have a couple of tweets, and people are concerned that that some folks think that this is just a not in my backyard issue, and some of the more wealthier neighborhoods are not interested in having this problem and helping out some of the neighborhoods that aren't as wealthy. Do you have any response to that?
Well, you know, Marymount is a pretty unique community. Marymount has attained a National Historic Landmark status for the entire community. It's something that's very rarely given to an entire community. National Landmark status is given to very few buildings, institutions to start with, but extremely rare for a community. And so something of this nature going through our park area could have a significant impact. Recently, the National Trust for Historic Places agreed with Marymount and named Marymount as one of the 11 most endangered places in the United States because of this project.
We have time for one more quick call. This is Andy from Kenwood. Andy's gone. How about Tim? Tim from Marymount. Tim?
That is heavy, yeah.
You got about 20 seconds.
I just had a question about the numbers that were being thrown around about reducing hours as far as traffic hours. Have you projected in your studies, you know, population growth for those areas out in Eastgate and such, that, you know, as you widen roads, you know, more people are going to be using it, and after 10 years or so, you're going to reach, you know, a maximum point to where, what do you do now when there's more congestion?
Ted, I'm going to give you time
yes.
for a quick answer. Tim, thank you for the call.
The answer is yes. The projections come from the OKI model. They're derived from the OKI model, and that does take into consideration land use issues.
All right. I want to thank you all for being here. We're out of time. It went way quickly, so I imagine at some point we'll want to talk about this again as the development and the studies continue. Thanks so much for being here. And thank you for joining us. We've been talking about the Eastern Corridor Project. My guests have been Hamilton County Engineer Ted Hubbard, Vice Mayor of Marymount Joe Stelzer, and Cincinnati Inquirer Transportation Economic Development Reporter Jason Williams. Cincinnati Edition is produced by Pete Reitmeier. Today's technical director was Bruce Ellis. I'm Marianne Zalesnik.